The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
It's a brand new show of Mission Minded. We'd like to keep our mind on our mission, our mind. Of course, we could not do it without, of course, Michael Coleman, who, of course, this is his show. We talked about non-for-profits and keep that mission in mind throughout the weeks here on Tony Curry Radio. You can listen to the show every single Wednesday at noon and 7. Fresh new shows at noon and 7 every Wednesday. Go to Spotify, search Tony Curry Radio. That's Curry with a K, K-U-R-R-E, and listen to all of our previous shows on demand. And go to info@TonyCurryRadio.net. info@TonyCurryRadio.net, and we'll take your email questions, and we'll answer those here on Mission Minded. First of all, Michael, how you doing, brother? What's going on? You staying cool?
Yeah, that's another. I'm trying to stay inside as much as possible to beat this heat. But we finish our move this weekend, and so every day I've been in the garage and moving boxes and unpacking boxes. So it's been a real sweat fest here in South Alabama.
You remember back in the days when we were in our 20s, and you used to call your three or four buddies up, get a six pack of brew and some pizza pies, and you have your moving crew. Thank you for not calling me.
Yeah, those days are over with. I will tell you. I paid for the movers, and I'm still worn out. Yeah, I cannot imagine doing it again and moving, you know, a three or four bedroom house again with just family members or friends to show up. Yeah, it's a beer and a pizza doesn't entice somebody in their 50s to come help you.
No, it doesn't. That's a great topic, and I'll get right into it as we fly by the seat of our pants here at Mission Minded. There are a lot of businesses. And I think of like Firehouse Subs, where, you know, a profit or a portion of their profits go to obviously first responders, and that was created by firefighters. What's your thoughts on say a mover? Say I want to start a moving business, and I obviously want to make money, but I'm also wanting to give back to charitable organizations, or maybe I even want to make it a moving service that is a non-for-profit. To maybe help move people like you or I, or maybe veterans or something like that. How does that work? And is that always a good idea, depending on where your passion is?
Well, it can be a good idea, but I will tell you, just given my recent experience, one of the things I recognized, you know, we talk about the workforce, you know, the great resignation, and so many people have quit their jobs, and just the competition. Yeah, you know, we have very low unemployment. And so there's just so much competition out there. And I looked at the people who moved us. We had several things that were broken. I had a different delivery service who brought a new refrigerator that we had bought. Guys didn't know how to move it. So, I mean, when they were moving it in, it didn't fit. So we had to take the doors off. Well, they didn't know how to, they didn't have the tools. They didn't know how to do it. There was several personal hygiene issues. We believe one of the guys went into the bathroom for about 15 minutes with a crack pipe. It's amazing, the workforce. And one of the things my wife, she got so upset. Some things were broken and things were done. And I said, honey, you just have to realize that's the world we live in today, that people work those kind of jobs. Not because it's not an intellectual thing. It's that they don't have intellectual ability, but lots of times people in addiction will work in jobs that are not going to require them to take drug tests and, yep, and things like moving companies and things like that. They're desperate to get the anybody to show up, much less somebody who is clean and drug free. And, you know, it's because it's such a grueling, a tough job. And I just said, look, I'm just glad we have anything that's still intact after that move with the crew that moved. It's just amazing at the work ethic. People don't care about your stuff. They don't move with professionalism. So it's very difficult if I was going to start something like a moving company it's just so hard to get that quality of people. Now one of the ministers I had was a job training program. And so part of that at the end, so they would do 6 weeks in the classroom, just learning what a good employee looks like and how important it is to be a person of ethics, just to show up every day, to do the right thing, to be motivated to do a good job because you're taking pride in it. And those were all new concepts to our students. But we would put them in a 3-week internship, and even after spending every day with them for 6 weeks, we put them in these internships, and they would do fine for a few days, and then boom, we get a call from the internship saying they didn't show up, and wow. You know, we trained them for 6 weeks to be able to navigate that world. They still wouldn't call in. And it really, you know, you and I were speaking before the show, talking about really all the issues and barriers and challenges out there to helping people, you know, and the people in the nonprofit world know what these are all about, and mental health and just all the challenges of poverty and just so many people want to help, but there's so many things out there just standing in the way. And primarily the people, primary barriers are the ones that, come from the ones that we're trying our most to help with.
You know, it's you bring up a great point, and obviously you and I are both in our 40s and 50s, and I don't want to be cynical here because I don't want to be the man telling people to get off my lawn. I'm not that guy. But I mean, I was even out having dinner, over Father's Day, and our waiter wasn't particularly friendly, and I was doing everything I possibly could to engage this individual to at least get a smile and get some type of engagement. He was looking over our shoulders. He wasn't making eye contact. And I finally thought, okay, do I want to go talk to the manager about this? But I don't think it would have made any bit of difference. And we've always had people like this in the workforce. I just think we see it more now. And it's really unfortunate because the things you talked about being pointed, being on time, being punctual, being friendly, writing down your order, making eye contact, those are things that are just so easy. Those should come naturally. And what people don't realize, and again, I'm not getting on a soapbox here. What people don't realize is you never know who you're serving. You know, when I started this That's radio right. station and we had five people listening, I didn't know who those five people were. That one of those five people could have been the next guy who was going to buy my company or love what we did. And next thing you know, it was going to turn into a wonderful opportunity for me. So you never know, you know, who you're serving, who you're listening to or who you're talking to. And it's important to remember that. It really is.
Well, and the thing that, and I understand my wife gets frustrated at me, and my daughters were with me. They were mad at the movers. And I tried to say, listen, let's step back for a second and look at it from these guys' position. A lot of these people are either in active addiction or they come from environments to where they're just trying to survive. I mean, one guy came in, no front teeth, which either he's a hockey player or he's a meth addict.
Or a little bit of both. Yes.
Yeah. From South Alabama, I'm going to go with meth.
Yeah.
Young guy. Now he was a nice guy. He was pleasant. But he's got four children at home. And so he's making about 13 bucks an hour. So, but I think it was obvious that he had an addiction. So what I try to tell people is we have a, and this is more of a class problem. It's not a race problem. So when we talk about poverty class, I'm not talking about a particular race, because you have poverty in white, black, Hispanic, Asian, all that. But when you have those type of environments, the basic things that we're taught growing up about what's important in civil society is just not emphasized. And so they don't know what they don't know. My dad taught me a few key things. And even though my relationship with my dad was not that great, he taught me a firm handshake. He taught me you look people in the eye and you with a firm handshake and you introduce yourself. And when you're talking to somebody, you look at them and why those things matter. He said, you'll never get a job if you go up and give somebody a handshake with a dead fish, you know, just kind of a limp wrist kind of, he says, it's just something about it that people take from it. And that stuck with me to this day. And it's things that I passed on. And what I found out was that none of the people coming to my class had ever been taught anything about looking at people in the eye. And hey, if you can't come to work, you call. What they're used to is when you can't come to work or when you can't do something is to run away. Literally and figuratively, mm-hmm. Separate yourself from the responsibility because there's going to be consequences and you're not equipped to handle the consequences. We used to teach them little things like, hey, if you go into a break room and you make a mess with a coffee, just spilling coffee. You see that sometimes you'll walk in there, yes. Just be a mess.
Yes.
And I said, if I was a boss and said, who did this? You're thinking, hey, I'm not going to tell them who did it. I'm certainly not going to tell them if I did it. And what I said was, you would not believe the amount of respect you will get if you step up and say, oh, I did that. I'm sorry. Let me get up and clean that up right now and just take ownership and take responsibility for something. And I said, I know it's counterintuitive to surviving on the streets and doing what it takes to get by. I said, but you'll be amazed at what taking ownership, even if there's consequences to it. That's what having integrity. I would tell them all the time, my great grandfather, who was the doctor in a small town in South Alabama for many, many years. That was back before FICO scores, wherever, you know, you got loans based on your name. Mm-hmm. And they knew if people in my family walked in a bank, shook your hand and said, hey, I need 1,000 or I need 10,000 or whatever, you know, they'd sign the paperwork, but they knew that they were going to get their money back because their name was as good as a handshake. And I told these guys, guys and girls, hey, the one thing nobody can ever take from you is your good name. You have to choose to give it away. And I said, and every time you tell somebody you're going to do something like show up for work and you don't, you don't do what you say you're going to do, or you don't accept responsibility for it, you're in essence giving away your good name. And it is so easy to give it away, but it is very hard to overcome a poor reputation. It oftentimes takes years.
You never know when your next big opportunity is going to be coming your way. And I'll use an example. You're listening to Mission Minded here with Michael Coleman, a show we do every single Wednesday. You can listen to it also on Spotify on demand. I had a gentleman who reached out to me about 3 weeks ago about wanting to buy my house. He said, I have a client who loves your house, has been looking at your house. It was on the market a couple of years ago and I took it off, and obviously I'm not selling, but he's like, he really wants to buy your house. Do you mind if we have a conversation? So I returned his phone call. I said, listen, it's not for sale, but I did put a number on. I said, everything's for sale, right? So yeah. I put a number on and I said, listen, if this guy can come, and it wasn't crazy. I said, but if this guy can come up with this, and knowing that the interest rates are going up and it's going to be more difficult to finance and get a mortgage. And he said, great, I'll pass it along. And so we were supposed to meet like last Monday. And this guy was probably 24, 25 years of age. The reason I reached out to him, and there's a million different, realtors I could have called, was that he made a video of himself talking to me, and he sent me the video. He goes, I want you to put a face with my voice. And I thought that was really interesting. I thought that was really cool. It kind of grabbed my attention. And so he was supposed to meet me Monday at the house about 1:30. Well, at 1:45, he said, listen, I'm not going to make it today. I don't feel well. And I was like, okay, that's okay. That, you know, and I'll give everyone, you know, one strike, you know, it's like maybe something happened, whatever, but you know, the days of you and I not showing up Kentucky Fried Chicken for an 8-hour shift because we weren't feeling well, just saying, I don't feel real well. Wasn't enough of an excuse. And so I reached back out to him. I said, well, give me another day this week that would work for you. And he said, I'm good on Thursday at 1:00. I never heard from the guy again. And I'm thinking, and you know, I was willing to not only bring this guy into my home for something that I quite frankly didn't want to do, but second of all, if and when I am ready to sell, we could have started a relationship that he would have been the first guy I would have called. And he works for a reputable company. And I'm kind of, and he had only worked there for 3 or 4 months. I'm like, dude, I just gave you, you reached out to me about this opportunity. It's just, it's head scratching. It really is. Michael Coleman, Mission Minded. The show is on every single Wednesday. Go to info@tonycurryradio.net, info@tonycurryradio.net. You can leave your email questions. We get to those throughout the week. Some great email questions. Keep them coming. Of course, you can also hear the show on Spotify, on Tony Curry Radio's podcast platform, and on Tony Curry Radio on our app. I want to throw out a non-for-profit idea that I just read about, and I want you to pretend it's your idea and tell me where you'll go with this. It's a big one, okay? So this gentleman down in Florida has started this non-for-profit called Phoenix Life Project, and it is there to help the people that were traumatized by the Surfside condo collapse. Do you remember the condo collapse? And he said, the reason I did it was because he lost his father in the collapse. And he said, you know, for the first 2 to 3 months, there were emergency people, there were medical people, there were mental health professionals, there was all these people to help with all this trauma. It took a long time to clean up the mess. And then like anything else, 3 months, where is everybody? Everyone's gone. And everyone just expects to move on with their lives. And he goes, and I'm seeing all these people. I forget how many people actually perished in that collapse. He said, but there are hundreds of people that were hugely traumatized by this horrible thing that happened in the middle of the night. And so he wants to start a non-for-profit. So I know this is a huge question and we could probably do five shows off this. But if this was your idea, what's the first step you'd take? If you've got the passion, you've got the idea, you got the connection, where do you go from here?
Yeah, so the question is as to what level of counseling. So if you're going to have professionals who are going to give their time for this, so then the question is there going to be is this going to be a revenue source? If you say no, we're going to offer free counseling.
And by the way, he's trying to raise $3 million to get this thing off the ground. So I'm not sure how that where that money's being spent or how it's going to be used, but he's trying to raise $3 million before he starts. Go ahead.
Yeah, and the reason is because he's probably going to have professionals. Because you've got different kinds of, you've got different dynamics here. Some people lost homes. Some people lost physical relationships, people, family members that they knew or loved. And so you just got different things. So you've got grief counseling. You've got, you could have post-traumatic stress syndrome as a result. There's a lot of different angles that go with it. Some people didn't have the means maybe to restart. Maybe there's going to be that element. So you're going to need a professional. This is more than just day-to-day life struggles. This is really a specialty need. And so you're going to have professional counselors. Now, what I would try to do, but it's very difficult to do, is to find counselors who are willing to maybe donate some time or reduce their rates. And lots of times, they have loans they have to pay off from their schooling. And, they've been going to school for years to get their license. And so every individual's got their own challenges and may not can afford to give a lot of their time. Because you have to understand, counselors have to do a lot of self-care. We had this at the mission. We're doing a lot of addictive counseling. When you're constantly allowing people to dump their stuff onto you, you've got to do something with that stuff yourself. It's not like you just, oh, ho hum, here's my advice, and you move on. When people are dumping stuff on you all day long, you see this with pastors, you see this with counselors, where people are just coming to you and just constantly barraging you with their problems and their issues. And that's why there's such a high burnout rate among pastors and counselors and everything else, is because, there's not proper self-care. So when I said all that to say, when you're trying to get somebody to donate their additional time to take on more of that, I've just found that it's not something they're willing to do. So that's probably why the money's being raised. And I would even think beyond, I might want to start it there and get a good template going and make sure that I always encourage people to start small with an idea. Because no matter how much you plan, when you actually start implementing these type things, there's going to be things that you cannot anticipate.
Yep.
And it's much easier to transition from a small program and to maintain that flexibility and fluidity than it is to go all in and have a program so big that it's like turning an aircraft carrier around. You can't do it on a dime. I'll give you one example. Don't know if I've addressed this in another show or not. A guy came to me. He wanted to do a school. There's a dorm for 100 kids, and he wanted to fill that dorm up and have a specialty school, basically for people who don't have the parents, almost something similar to an orphanage, but really just a heavily mentoring lived in place. And he said, I don't want to piecemeal it. I just want to go all in and do the 100. And I said, well, let's say you fill it up with 100 and you recognize, hey, I've got some challenges over here. It's much more difficult to change a program with 100 people, 100 kids in it, than to maybe start off with 10 kids and go through a couple of cycles to understand where the weak parts are, make those adjustments. And then when you feel like you got the program good and tight, then you expand to full capacity. So I would really encourage this guy, as he's raising the money, to go ahead and start thinking through that because when you start talking about, yeah, I want people affected by the condo tearing down, he's got to figure out where his limits are going to be, because you've got some people who survived it. You've got family members of those who didn't survive it, who are living in there. And then you've just got regular community members. Think about that. The people who lived in the condos next door, and the trauma they may be feeling. So are you going to reach out to them? So you're really going to have to figure out who are my clients going to be, and to what level am I going to be able to serve them? Am I going to serve them for 5 counseling sessions, 10 counseling sessions? Is it going to be endless? These are all, and where are we going to do it? So, you know, I've got to have a facility.
You're giving me anxiety, man.
It just goes on and on and on. And see, that's part of what I've talked about. I know I've talked about this, but it's just so important. We love the idea of helping people. I see those movers and I'm like, man, you have the intelligence to do something much greater, but to move them from where they are in life into a much higher thing is more than just giving them a single opportunity. You've got to unpack their life and a lifetime of habits and addiction. And it gets so difficult to help people let go of their past. And there's so many mental health considerations that go on there. All the traumas of their past and oftentimes growing up in a childhood where there's sexual abuse and physical abuse and emotional abuse and just either a father not there or just an abusive father, or it just goes on and on and on. So I encourage anybody who's doing anything in the mental health area to help people. And I would just tell you in general, one of the things that I think works against us. Now, I am a patriot at heart. I love the United States of America. Of course, we have some real challenges in our history. We have some real challenges as we move forward. We're very divided. But one of the things that runs against the American spirit is we have a very pick yourself up by the bootstraps, mm-hmm. go make something happen. And what happens is we go out and we do that. We take our own and we say, hey, I have the ability. I'm going to go do this. I'm going to start my own business. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And we become very, I don't need other people's help. I'm not going to be dependent, because to show dependency is to show weakness. So what ends up happening is we move away from a sense of community. Mm-hmm. And what we find in community, and you and I have had lunch several times together, and you've talked to me about your personal life. I've talked to you about my personal life. When we do that, when we express to each other that, hey, man, we don't have all this figured out. We need each other. We need the help from each other. We need the support. We need the prayers. We need all that from in community. And that's just such a vital aspect of who we are. But we just keep getting further and further and further away. And so when you're dealing with everything, you're a husband or a wife, and you're dealing with grandkids, and then your parents are getting old and you're having to care for them. And then you have all the mental health and you're just trying to fit all that into your brain. And you see so many things crumbling down around you. That's just where we have a real struggle as a society. The culture says, go out and you can achieve anything. But the reality is we need each other. We need to have that open communication. And so a lot of the mental health, in my opinion, comes from a lot of the mental health problems that we have. Is we just don't sit around anymore sipping coffee and talking to each other authentically and openly about the challenges of life. When I do that, when I have those relationships, I feel my overall mental health. It doesn't mean I don't have problems, but just my overall mental health is much better, because talking about it allows me to process it,
yeah.
think it through, and get other people involved. And that's what counselors oftentimes do. They just allow you to talk it out and help you process it in a healthy way. And our mental health situation just continues to seemingly to get worse and worse and worse. And I think a lot of it is because we're so self-govern. We're in our phones all the time. We don't sit around and spend time with one another in authentic community And I think that's hurt us as a whole.
Amen, brother. He's Michael Coleman with Mission Minded. Keep your mind, your mission, your mind. We do the show every Wednesday. Of course, you can hear us on Spotify. We have 30, 40 different episodes up there. You can listen to all of them. They're fantastic. On Tony Curry Radio. It's Curry with a K, K-U-R-R-E. And, of course, go to info at tonycurryradio.net and leave your email questions. You brought up a great point. You know, we have been taught, you know, my dad used to always talk about John Wayne. He never asked for help. You never saw him cry. And that makes us softer by doing that. But what you do by not reaching out to people when you do need help is you take away their opportunity to help you. And a lot of times that's what they need. So by not asking for help, and I've like you said, we've had lunch many times and I've talked to you about some of the deep, dark places I've certainly been in my life. And that gives you an opportunity to give me words of wisdom. That makes you feel good. And so to be able to help each other in that way, you know, don't take that away from someone that perhaps can be in a situation that can actually, you know, brighten your day or see the light at the end of the tunnel in your life. And that's important to do. And again, if you're listening to the show for the first time, you're like, goodness gracious, I don't want to start a non-for-profit. It sounds like a major pain. We're not detracting from that at all. We just want to make sure that when you do and you want to change the world in your own passionate type of way, that you have all your ducks in a row and you don't have any surprises. I would think for this particular thing, the Phoenix Life Project, which I applaud, I think it's wonderful. I like the fact that he's trying to raise $3 million before he gets started, because at least the money aspect of it then, and again, I don't know how he came up that number, I love that, but I think it is super important that, you know, when you're talking about starting a non-for-profit, most people know it's not going to make money and you just want to have enough money to take care of whatever that project is. But a lot of times people will just kind of go as they go, right? They start it. It starts off small and they're like, okay, we need more. We need more money here. We're getting more people. And sometimes it's almost like they're afraid to let people know they exist. We did it with the Bright House Foundation. You know, we doled out roughly $30,000 to $40,000 every Christmas. That's when the biggest need was. And we want to let people know we were out there to help, but we couldn't help much beyond what we were already doing, because then it was going to turn into this huge thing where, and we had a lot of people, you know, coming to our house and calling us directly, who we didn't know who they were. And we didn't know how to vet them either. We didn't know if right. they were double dipping. We didn't know if they had already been to, several other, the Exceptional Foundation or some other foundation that perhaps was helping their family. And then all of a sudden they're asking us for help. So that was another part of the non-for-profit aspect that really kind of turned our heads a little bit.
Yeah. And, you know, I was just reading when you were talking, you brought something to mind. I just read a recent article about the narrative of nonprofits. You know, sometimes there's social services, but that you're meeting, where it's the mental health or the addiction or homelessness, food bank, all those are critically important. Just applaud people who are just delving into that, because you're choosing to oftentimes put yourself into some dark places. You know, I just want to continue to encourage each person to be vulnerable. Like I said, when you and I sitting down talking, you opened up to me. You were being vulnerable. You didn't know what I would do with that information. And that's that fear sometimes, the fear of judgment, the fear of condemnation, the fear of somebody taking that information and sharing it, keeps us so closed off. And we try to present this false appearance that everything's fine. And in reality, it's not. And so I get that it's scary sometimes to be open and to be vulnerable and to that there's a risk there. But I really believe it's a risk worth taking. When we get into the nonprofit space, getting back to what the article was talking about, I thought it was very interesting. I think it's very relevant. You have people today that are very issue oriented, starting nonprofits, fighting, let's just take the gun issue, for instance. Mm-hmm. So you have people fighting for gun control. And of course, you see all that the public tends to lean towards that when you have mass shootings, the number of mass shootings. And we've been having a lot lately. And so more and more people are talking about gun control. And then you have people who, so the people who are saying, no, I believe in the Second Amendment. And so you have nonprofits out there fighting against each other. And what happens is really they're not effective in what they're doing, because they're both locked into an issue and they're fighting against each other. And the whole point of the article was talking about the effectiveness of a narrative. And so what I would encourage people, whether you're Second Amendment or you're over here fighting, you know, I'm not taking sides in this, is talk about what you think the norm should be. And you talk about how to move in a positive direction, because you will have people out there in the public. It doesn't matter what you're trying to fight against. You will have people out there in the public who are undecided. I mean, when I dealt with homelessness and addiction, I had people who were entrenched into, these are lazy people. They just don't want to work. Mm-hmm. They just want to make it off the backs of others. And while I disagree with that, there was nothing I was going to say or do that was going to change that. But so what I chose to do was say, look, I want people, I'm going to continue to give a message out to people who are not yet, have not set, or not set in their ways or set in their views, and talk about that. While yes, that there could be people like that, the problems run so much deeper. And so we have so many people fighting for the space. So here's another nonprofit that comes along doing great things. That's going to fighting for the $3 million, you know, because there's a finite amount of money out there that's available to the nonprofit. We're all out there fighting. And instead of arguing against each other, I really want to encourage you out there in the nonprofit world to set a proper narrative of what is it you're trying to affect? What is it you're trying to change? What is it you want the new norm to be? If you think there's too many guns on the street, Don't go to war against the people who are entrenched in the Second Amendment. Talk about common sense ways and positive ways and how it affects the community. And trust me, no matter which side of the argument you're on, you're going to win hearts. And when people attach their hearts to your cause, the money will flow.
There you go.
And when you begin to do that, you can build long-term sustainability for your nonprofit. I've seen it 1,000 times, is that you go into a nonprofit and they are doing good stuff, important stuff, but their narrative, what they put out on social media, what they're putting out to the public, is not properly conveying how this is helping the community and helping the individuals.
Yep.
And so just, again, I just want to get to, I know we've talked about, we kind of bounced all over the place
in this
episode today, but I really want to just kind of close this out with talking about focusing on the importance of narrative and sticking to that positive, not fighting with other nonprofits, not talking about why one's wrong, or just talk about what it should be, keep it positive, and keep pressing on that, and you will influence minds and hearts to your way.
Michael, great stuff, man. We appreciate you. Another show in the can. We'll do it again next week. Again, go to info@tonycurryradio.net. info@tonycurryradio.net. You can leave your emails. We'll answer any emails, any email about non-for-profits or anything else. And, of course, you can listen to the show live every Wednesday at noon and 7 right here on Tony Curry Radio and the Tony Curry Radio app. Go to TKR on Android or Apple, and you can download the app. It's free. And also go to Spotify and listen to all of our previous episodes on demand. Michael, I love you, man. We'll catch up next week, okay?
All right, right back at you, brother.
Thank you, brother.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.